Welcome to Real Money Radio, the show that focuses on real people, real problems, and real solutions. Here's your host, certified financial planner, David Holland.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Great show lined up for you. I know that because I've got some things I want to share with you myself. So here's my first topic. And, you know, this is really cool. I had a recent opportunity to go out to Sedona, Arizona for a family vacation. And part of my vacation was I got to go horseback riding. And I took the whole family. It was fantastic. So, you know, when I'm on vacation, my mind, I try to put it in neutral, but I still find a lot of relevance in the things that I see in the world to the world of finance. So I think you'll appreciate and find this story very relevant. And it's also featured in a column I recently wrote. So here we go. Billy Diamond, a 77-year-old cowboy, was our horseback riding guide during our recent family vacation to Arizona. Billy showed up at our hotel to pick us up. A dust-covered white hat gave shade to his tan leather face and squinting eyes. I tell you, the guy had the most pronounced set of crow's feet I've ever seen. He was a real deal. And the spurs on his cowboy boots, I am sure, were not just for show. A guarded smile quickly yielded to a big toothy grin when he greeted us. And you know what he said, right? Howdy, partner. We hopped into his truck. It was a diesel dually. I don't need to tell you where it was made. And it wasn't long before we were bouncing down an old dirt road, about a 45-minute drive out of town. And we heard stories of unusual landowners, pesky campers, and a sprawling city that was getting just way too big for its britches and way too much into cow country. Well, so we got to the, wasn't long, we got to the ranch, and after filling out, signing the, you know, the usual, we can kill you but you can't sue us, liability release forms, you've seen those, right? We got saddled up, everybody got their appropriate horse, we got measured, and it wasn't long, we were on the trail. It was beautiful, the sun was warm, the air was crisp, there was a little bit of breeze in the air, and I have to confess to you that it was not very hard for me to not think about work. And, you know, I kind of let my mind wander, and I imagined that we were on a herd, you know, taking our cows to market on this trail, and I just kind of, you know, just relaxed into the experience. And then, but my little dream was over pretty quickly. Billy shouted out, "Stay on the trail. Stay on the trail." I pulled my reins to the horse. I pulled his nose out of a bush he had found. He kind of wandered off the trail while my mind was wandering, instead of staying right behind the horse in front of him. And he said, so this is funny, Billy, of course, you know, kind of with a funny look on his face, says, "Hey, the beaten path is beaten for a reason. You'll find rattlesnakes, badger holes, and sharp rocks off the trail. It's safer for you and your horse to stay on the trail." And I can't give justice to his accent, so I won't try it. But he gave me a quick scolding, and the message was pretty clear. And so I said, "Yes, sir," and I was back on the trail. So we rode along. It was a nice conversation, and we're riding along. And then Billy asked me, "So what do you do back in the world? Back in your world, you know, my world, I guess, of city slickers?" And I told him I was a financial planner with a kind of a big grin of my own, and I let him know that he wasn't the only one with a few decades of experience in what he does. Well, Billy liked that. We kind of connected, and then he shared a story with me that I'm pretty sure was not part of his standard library of cowboy tales that he would tell us would-be tourists out for a trail ride for a couple of hours on vacation. He said, "Well, I wish I'd met you a few years ago, because my wife inherited $280,000 back in 2006. And he said that was quite a windfall for him. It will be quite a windfall for a lot of people, for most of us. But he said it was quite a windfall, and roping and riding don't pay much. So that was kind of a big deal for he and his wife. And they weren't really sure, but he said, he goes, "You know, I figured on turning that into some sort of retirement for he and his wife. He met a guy who came to him, you know, he'd been, I guess, run into, and he talked to him, and he told him about his situation, and that this fella told him that he could earn a bunch of money without any chance of losing it. And Billy then continued and said, but you know what? It was a scam. His wife told him when they experienced this that it wasn't his fault, you know, that they'd kind of gone into this with their eyes wide open. But Billy said, you know what? I stared at the ceiling every night instead of sleeping. I stared at the ceiling every night for a whole year wishing he had done something different. Now, he continued. I said, well, whatever happened? He goes, well, that snake oil salesman, appropriate terminology, that snake oil salesman ended up getting a 5-year prison sentence. And it's a good thing, Billy says, because if he hadn't, he said, I would have strangled him. And by the looks of Billy, I would not put it past him. Well, I had to ask, you know what's coming, right? I said, well, Billy, what would you have done differently if you had to do over? And Billy thought about it for a minute, kind of sat forward in his saddle and said, you know, I'll tell you what I would have done. I would have taken more time to evaluate my options. I wouldn't have been in such a hurry. I would have also thought about it and probably realized that you can't make a lot of money without some amount of danger or risk. You know, there's no free lunch. He also said, you know, I should have checked the guy out before turning all of our money over to him. I should have stayed on the beaten path. Billy beat me to it. I was going to connect the dots, but Billy beat me to it. He said, I should have stayed on the beaten path. And I love this. Ready for this quote? There ain't nothing but swindlers, rustlers, and thieves off the trail. I know that, says that now, says Billy, but it doesn't help much. So I'm going to keep on riding until the doctor or my body says stop. And then he asked me to tell you, and I told everyone in a column recently, tell him not to make the same mistake I did. So, you know, Billy's words, our conversation, which was genuine and natural and, you know, just kind of happened, it made me think that, you know, veering off the trail can be exciting, but there's also risk associated with it. You know, Billy veered off the trail and he lost his wife's inheritance as a result. So I will say to you, because Billy wants me to, and I think it's also sound advice, heed Billy's warning. Stay on the trail most traveled. You know, the beaten trail really is beaten for a reason. And when you get out off the trail seeking return, seeking big gains, seeking something that nobody else knows about, shh, it's a secret, don't tell anybody else, act now, limited supplies, you know, this is really a special thing, you have to do it today. All that is bunk. Usually that is a scam. There's no free lunch. There is no money market account that will earn 20% and be completely liquid. It just doesn't exist. So keep Billy's words in your mind as you go through your investing and what you do. So wanting to share that story with you. I'm going to grab a break. We come back. I want to talk a little bit about the markets and where they are and a little definitions. I think that'll help you keep some perspective on the way things are. Stay right there.
When it comes to finding a financial advisor you can trust, do you know the right questions to ask? David Holland has written a popular book that can help, and it's called How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams. David has crammed his experience and insider knowledge about advisors and how they operate into this popular book. Visit Amazon.com to order your copy. Or if you want to meet one-on-one with David to talk about your financial goals and concerns, he'll give you a free copy of his book with no cost, no obligation. The number to call for your appointment with David is 671-PLAN. That's 671-PLAN. Or visit planstronger.com.
Welcome back. More of me for you, and I'm glad to do it because there's things, you know, I accumulate ideas or subjects that come up in my work week that I want to share with you that I think are interesting and relevant. And so here's another one, okay? We hear more and more chatter, and it's something that I want to talk about. More and more chatter about the markets and where they are, okay? We are 6 years into a bull market. The bull market that we're in right now started March 9th, 2009. That is when the Dow got all the way down to 6,500 points. Okay, it had been at 14,000 points back in October of 07. So what is that? It's not long, right? That's less than 2 years, a year and a half, that the market dropped from its high point to its low point. I think the raw percentage is like, what is that? Over 50%? Yeah. You don't need to be a CPA to figure that out. 14,000 points on the Dow, 6,500 points, more than 50%. So, but with the current market and where it is, there's always, it seems like every time we turn around, be it on websites, radio, television, newspaper, whatever your source of financial information or just general exposure to the media is really a better way to describe it, you're going to see a continued discussion about the market and how high it is because it makes for news. So I felt like some definitions would be helpful. Now, let's look at what those are. A bear market, because that's the worry. Oh, we're going to have a bear market. Oh, we're going to have a bear market. We can't have a bull market forever. And that's true, but let's get some perspective. A bear market is a 20% drop from a previous high. So until we got to 20% below that original 14,000 point Dow in 2007, it had to drop 28 points before it became a bear. Now, if you apply that to today with the Dow, I'm just going to use a round number because the market's been moving around. Let's just use a round number around 18,000 for the Dow. Then a 20% drop would be 3,600 points. That'd be significant. Now, let's get a little more definitions for you. Why do they call it a bear market? Well, allegedly, and this is something I do not want to test the experiment on. I don't want to create my hypothesis and have to test it and reach any sort of conclusion on this with a science fair project. Allegedly, a bear, when it attacks you, it claws you down, which is why they call it a bear market. Okay, that makes sense to me. Don't want to test it. Now, let's go to a few other definitions. A correction is a 10% drop. So all the worry that you may hear about a correction being imminent is a 10% drop or more, but not more than 20. And the other thing is that a correction is normal. They happen. They're not an aberration or a fluke or a weird intersection of the stars. It is simply normal for markets to do that. All right. Let's pull back even further to a pullback. A pullback is a 5% or more drop. There you go. Now, let me give you some perspective. On any given day, what I usually see is you see these Dow move. We'll use the Dow as an example. We see movements of the Dow, 50 points, 80 points, 90 points, 150 points, up and down. Well, let's get some perspective. A 90-point drop on the Dow, it makes the news, right? Market plummeted today, 90 points. Come back after the break. Fox News alert, come back after the break. Okay, you got all these alerts that are constant bombarding us that you've got to come back after the break. For a 90-point drop, I don't need to come back after the break. And I'm not picking on Fox News. This is what I hear from all the major media outlets, okay? So a 90-point drop is 0.5%. Okay, the market is alive, so to speak. The market closing bell, the closing values for it to close at 18,000 or 16,000 or 20,000 or to be up 50 or down 50, on any given day, that is the cumulative net result of buyers and sellers for the day. So if the market is up a little bit, let's say the market's up 90 points, that is reflects that there was a little more demand than for sale. So in other words, there are more buyers than sellers kind of looking for that same basket of 30 stocks in the Dow. And when the opposite happens, it's the opposite. So, but 0.5 point is nothing. It's a heartbeat. If it did nothing every day, something would be weird. So the next time you see or hear or read somebody with an opinion about the market and making news and reporting the news, which has become much of the same, keep in mind that 0.5% is nothing to talk about. But guess what? They've got to fill the air. They've got to fill the 24/7 of television, and they've got to do something with all that ink. So just bear that in mind. And I don't mean to be soapbox about it, but you know, the reality is that there will be a correction. There'll be a pullback before that, and there'll be a bear market after that. Pullback, correction, bear market. It's coming. But nobody can tell you when it's going to happen. It's, you can't predict it. It's very, very difficult. You say, yeah, but David, you can see warning signs. I mean, look, you know, you guys watch my investments every day. Yes, that's what we do in my office. Well, hey, can't you just, when you see things going down, just sell, go to cash? And then when it starts to go back up, put the money back in? No, I can't do that. I cannot do that. That is extraordinarily difficult. So, perspective. Keep perspective when you hear these things and reported in the news and you wonder how they affect your portfolio. And, you know, the markets are going to fluctuate. It's just part of the deal. Don't get all excited. And, you know, let's go back to why you have money in the market to begin with. Is it for a short-term transaction? Are you trying to do something for 6 months to a year? Okay, that's a whole other type of investing. That's short-term trading. That's market timing. That's day traders. That's not the subject or the trade of a professional advisor, and it's not what long-term investors usually do. Big money doesn't do that. Serious money, big wealth does not do that. When everybody was freaking out when the Dow went to 6,500, big, wealthy, institutional investors, pension plans with billions of dollars in them, you know what they were doing? They were the other side of that transaction. They were buying all the stock that people wanted to unload at any price. They were buying GE at $5 a share. Okay? They were buying these stocks and saying to themselves, we're buying it, we're going to hold it long term. That's the way the big money works. So I'll give you a practical example of what I'm talking about. Let me grab a quick break. We'll be right back.
Where can you find more spin than in politics? If you said financial services, you'd be correct. Just ask a stockbroker or insurance agent how you should invest your money, and what do you think they would say? Unfortunately, if an advisor is limited in what he can offer, that advisor is often understandably biased. You need to ask questions like what products and services they can and cannot offer. Ask about their licensing and credentials. Remain skeptical. This PSA has been brought to you by Holland Financial, who wants to help you to plan stronger. For more information, call 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
And we are back, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to continue my talk about the market with how you go about investing when you are trying to make a transition or trying to figure out what your investments need to look like going forward. So let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. You know, one of the things that people get caught up on is how long they should look at holding investments and how they make the transition into retirement. And I did a financial presentation the other day, a seminar at a local restaurant. And if you ever get an invitation, you know, please come. You'll enjoy it. It's very different than anything else you might have ever seen. I take questions from the people that come, and it makes it a very interesting and interactive and fun talk. And people seem to like it. So, but I got the question the other day, which I thought was interesting in light of everything that's happened in the markets. I got a question from a gentleman that said, what do you think about oil stocks? And great question, right? Because energy stocks, oil stocks have been down. And my answer was to him, I like them. Simple enough, right? So I like them. And I added to that, I said, now I like them for the long term. I have my own investment portfolio that has a lot of the same stuff that I'm due for my clients. So I'm, you know, investing in the same types of investments. But I also might pick up an individual stock here and there if I just feel like it's something that might fit for my portfolio. Well, when I do that, I don't look at that stock's price and think of a short-term trade like I'm going to hold it just for 6 months. And the oil stock makes an excellent example because I explained to this to the gentleman. I said, you know, oil stocks are, you know, they're down now. And yes, they are likely to go up in the long term, but oil has been trading around, you know, $49, $50 a barrel. It was lower than that before. It got down to like $44 a barrel. Now it's back up to close to $50. And I said to him, and I will say to you, that oil stocks could go to could go down further if oil drops further, or oil could go from $49 a barrel to $30 a barrel before it goes back to $80. Now, if I'm thinking of a longer-term investment, and my, when I say long-term, I'm thinking 10 years out. When if I buy a stock, I'm going to look at 10 years out. Will that company be a strong, growing company 10 years from now? I put my little time machine in my mind, and I think forward and think about that before I would buy a stock. Well, the short answer to that question is yes, I think oil stocks, if you've selected, you know, made good choice based on fundamentals and, you know, good things about the company, that it could be around and be worth a lot more than it is today. But it could go down further in value. And if you were buying it with that view, you are taking, in my opinion, the right approach. So if you're getting into the stock market for the first time, or you are even better, let's say you're about to retire, and let's say you've got, I'll just use an example, let's say you've got $200,000 in a 401k, and you're getting close to retirement. Maybe you're a year away, and you want to retire, and you're going to want to make some changes to your portfolio to reflect being retired and needing to draw income from that portfolio. Maybe, let's say this is one of your primary investments, and you're a year away, but right now you've got most of that money in the stock market. It's investment funds through the 401k, 403b, whatever you've got, you know, through work. And you're wondering about what you should do. Do you just resign yourself to the fact that, well, I hope the market will be up in a year, and then I'll go ahead and liquidate my investments, move it over to an IRA, work with an advisor, if I'm not already, get a second opinion about it, and then build a plan, and then use whatever's there to create your plan? Or do you go ahead now and take some money off the table? In other words, are you going to leave the whole 200 and just let it ride and hope that it will be worth 200 or more when you get to retirement, which again is just a year out? Well, I would argue that it would be smart to take some money off the table and be able to work through this and figure out what, you know, what makes sense for you, and figure out what they, the types of things that make sense for your circumstance. So if you're a year out, you want to reevaluate and make sure you've got the right things, and maybe, like I said, maybe take some money off the table. Because what if you get to the end? What if you get to right there near the month before you retire and the market drops 20%? We talked about a bear market. What if we had some major international incident, fill in the blank, whatever it is, and we see that? What would be the impact? Well, if it goes from 200,000 down to 160,000, do you think that's going to change what you're going to be able to do with that money? Might you have to work longer? Maybe your retirement gets put on hold. You know, that happened to a lot of people at the end of the 1990s. They were ready to retire, and they ended up having work longer because we went through a three-year down period where the markets were down cumulative over 45%, like 47, 48%. So people's retirements, especially if they bought Enron or some of the other disasters, were ruined, but a lot of other people's were put on hold. So the moral of the story is that when you get closer to your retirement, and as you move into retirement, you may already be there, you want to reevaluate the types of investments. And it's not about predicting when the crash or the drop or the correction or all these things occur. It's positioning yourself so that you are prepared for it, because we can't know when it's going to be. But you want to make sure that you have that money arranged in a way that when it's time to start drawing on it, that if the market's gone down you're not having to, not only are you drawing on less of a total value, but you're not having to draw on something when it's down. You know, I talk about a lot of different types of rules on this program and in my columns and other things that I put out. And one of the rules that's out there is called they refer to it as the safe withdrawal rate of 4%. And the 4% rule says you take 4% per year out of your investments, and that's deemed or considered or provided as guidance of a safe rate. In other words, if you take the 4 every year, you won't run out. Under most scenarios, that's what's been postulated, that's how it works. And now that's all well and good, but the problem with that is if you keep your investments pedal to the metal full bore and we have a 20% correction and we've had almost a 40% bear market. So if we have a 20% bear market or even a 40% like we had in 2008, that $200,000 account now is only worth $120,000. And you're going to pull 4%? 4% on $120,000 is nothing like getting 4% on $200,000. It's $4,800 instead of, what is that? Instead of 4% on $200,000, doing it in my head, $8,000. So, you know, it's a big difference. So these are the things that you need to bear in mind as you think about your retirement. All right. That's all the time we have for today. Be sure to tune in next time.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions. Are you looking for convenient, straightforward financial information? Just say no to superficial sales presentations. And yes, to the free Real Money app. Get David Holland's new app for your smartphone or tablet. Just search Real Money with David Holland at your mobile device's store. You'll be able to access 17 educational TV shows, plus hundreds of radio shows and financial columns, all in the palm of your hand and on your schedule. So very easy and so very important to you. Again, to download the free app, search Real Money with David Holland.